Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Hello, welcome to episode number 10 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Jim Person.
And I'm Bob DeMarco from thenifejunkie.com. Welcome.
Welcome to the final Knife Junkie Podcast of 2018. Not the final Knife Junkie Podcast, but just the final one of this year. And boy, you know, time has flown by, Bob.
It has indeed. 10 podcasts. It seems like we just started doing this.
Yeah, 10 is sort of a milestone because I can't remember the statistic, but, you know, a lot of podcasters only make it to like 5, 6, or 7 episodes. So we've already made a milestone and surpassed many of them. And I look forward to hitting show 50, show 100. And just keep this Knife Junkie Podcast train rolling right along.
So what do you have in your pocket today? Let me guess.
Yes, I've still got my Buck Canoe. I'll be honest, I didn't put any knives on my Christmas list, so I doubt anybody's going to get me one. But I am really liking the Buck Canoe.
Oh, that's
aesthetic,
cool.
Aesthetically and functionality, it's just a great little knife for me.
I can't think of anyone that you know that might get you a knife for Christmas. That's just crazy. Well, today I got my Spyderco Military, all black with the S30V, original classic. Incidentally, my father has this exact same knife, and my brother does as well. And we all got them independently of one another, which is cool because neither of them are certified knife guys, but they're appreciators. I also have the Black Talon 2, which is my in-the-waistband carry these past couple weeks because, I don't know, winter time, I guess, and the Black Talon 2's S-shaped serrated blade can make it through all sorts of heavy materials. And the Case Mini Trapper is in my front left pocket, this beautiful little trapper. First of all, I love the trapper configuration, the clip point blade and the spay blade that you'll find on any trapper, but something about the size of this, it's the size of a GEC 15, and you know I love the 15, so it's like the perfect size to throw in your pocket without a pocket slip, or with a pocket slip if you want. And I don't know, something about this bone handle is just magical. I really love Case knives.
I like the bone handle knives as well. Little sharp looking knives.
Yeah, classy.
Yeah. So for our final show of 2018, kind of wrapping up the new year, we've got wrapping up the year and got the new year to begin. We're going to have a Ships in the Night segment coming up. We're going to have a knife news segment following our main show topic. And knife news segment this time is going to be taking a look at knife shows coming up in 2019. And we're going to try to start incorporating a review or inclusion of knife shows and dates and that kind of thing on pretty much every podcast that we do from now on into the new year. But also, as I mentioned, the new year upon us, Bob's going to kind of take a look back at 2018. Not all of the trends, not all of the news items, just a curated look back at 2018 and some of the highlights that you kind of want to hit on in the knife world.
I like the way you said curated. That immediately elevates me like 3 or 4 rungs.
Absolutely.
I'm now a curator.
You are a curator. And we'll get to that. But first, we've got our Ships in the Night.
Buy, sell, trade, keep the addiction healthy and justified. Ships in the Night.
So just moments before Jim and I rolled on this podcast today, I received in the mail the Rake Knives P801-SF. Now, this knife has gotten a lot of action and a lot of YouTube play over the past year and a half, and now I see why. It was sitting in my Amazon cart for months, and like my real steel, I just decided to buy it, and I'm really glad I did. If you have only $30 to spend, I would say spend it on this knife. It is beautiful to look at, in my estimation. It has a serviceably long blade of almost 3.5 inches. It's a budget knife, but it's using a high-end budget steel, 14C28N, a Swedish Sandvik steel. It's very sharp. It's very thin. The action is incredible, and the ergonomics are right on point. Now, is this worth the $30 you're going to spend on it? I would say it's worth every dollar, and I'm going to make this a new shop knife, and I'm going to put it through its paces, see how it does on Kydex and other tough materials. I will let you know in the future if I have anything to report, but for now, I would say the Rake P801-SF, which is kind of a long name, is a 100% home run.
And I'm sure we'll have a video knife review of that Rake knife coming up in the new year on the Knife Junkie YouTube channel, which you can find at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube.
Well, just as a matter of fact, Jim, before I called you tonight, I shot a quick video just to show it. That's all. My first, very, very first impression. So I'll pop that up. And I think I just said more about it now than I do in the video, but it's a nice look at it.
Right. No, that was a good off-the-cuff review of it, and it sounds like a knife definitely worth adding to the collection, especially at that kind of low price point.
Absolutely.
How'd you like that upgrade on Ships in the Night? Now here's more of the Knife Junkie Podcast.
And we're back on episode number 10 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. Jim Person along with Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco here on the final Knife Junkie Podcast of 2018. And we thought it would be a really good opportunity to kind of look back at some of the news, some of the action that happened in the year in the world of knives and knife collecting. Again, don't have time for everything, but just a kind of curated look at some of the things that hit Bob and over the year 2018. Sure, we've missed some, but, you know, give you a chance to kind of go through it and chat a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's right, Jim. I just sat down and jotted down things I remembered about this past year in knives, either preponderant themes among YouTubers or just little news events and little things that I remember that just stick in my mind. And I'm going to start with something that is very exciting to me, and I know very exciting to a lot of Kai USA or just Kershaw ZT lovers, is that Kershaw Knives has gotten rid of its speed safe almost completely in deference to bearing pivots. So it at one time, almost every single Kershaw knife you got had the speed safe, which, Jim, if you don't know what that is, it's a way of opening a knife, an assisted opening. It's not technically an automatic or a switchblade because you're not pushing a button. You're just pushing the flipper tang, a little piece of the tang that sticks out, the flipper tab.
Right,
and
right.
Then a little torsion bar, which is loaded up with tension when you close the knife, expels the blade quickly. So it's kind of half automatic. And
gotcha.
And it's a real great way for a production knife company to create a very cheap knife with reliable action. That doesn't mean that the action is going to be smooth or great or nice or any of those things we talked about in our last podcast. We were talking about action of knives. This just makes it reliable to open.
Right.
The beauty part. Now I'm going to tell you why it's so wonderful that they got rid of that and why it's so wonderful they're using ball bearings in the pivots. So now the blades are opening freely and smoothly with just a touch to the flipper tab and without the use of any springs. Around the pivot of the knife on both sides of the blade, there is a washer, and each washer is impregnated with ball bearings. Those ball bearings and the tension built up between the blade and the lock, the locking detent, are what create the tension to shoot the blade out. So really, what Kershaw is saying is we're taking a little bit of extra care to engineer and manufacture these knives so that they have the tolerances it takes to open up reliably each time, smoothly, without a spring, without a torsion spring, for a low cost. And that's great news.
It sounds like a more quality knife.
It is, because it takes more engineering time and prowess and machine time to actually make a knife like that.
Right.
So we're excited about the bearings and the Kershaws. Another bearing-related, pivot-related news from this year is the Rick Hinderer Knives Triway Pivot. So Rick Hinderer Knives... Rick Hinderer is a knife maker from Ohio, my home state, and I've always loved his knives. He was a former firefighter who had a knife fail on him on the job, and he decided, I'm going to make the stoutest knives in the business, and they're never going to fail. And he's been making knives for like 25 some odd years, and they're awesome. But they were always sort of taken down a notch due to their action. Many of them have flippers, and when you press the flipper, the blade just kind of comes part of the way out. The flipper was really being used as a hand guard, a finger guard, and not really a way to shoot the blade out. So listening to the public hue and cry over the last 10 years, Rick Hinderer decided that with all of his new generation of knives that come out, with each new generation of knife that comes out, he's offering them with a tri-way pivot. That means you can have your pivot three ways. He ships it with the ball bearing pivot in there. But you can also switch it out for the original nylon washers or brass washers. I'm sorry, bronze washers. So basically, he for the same price that it used to be, he ships you the knife and he ships you three different pivot options. And, wow. And people are just raving about how smooth it is with the bearings. And now, Jim, I have three older generation Hinderers that I love, but I'm not in the market for a new one because they're quite expensive. But now I feel jealous and almost envious of the people who have gotten their tri-way pivot.
Right.
Damn it, I want that smoothness.
Can you order the additional pivots? Just
no, because the, you know, it's the engineering on the inside around the pivot has had to change. Presumably, right. I haven't cracked it open and looked inside, but presumably right. It's got to be different on the inside to accommodate those three different washer okay. styles.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So that was exciting news.
Well, a couple of exciting bits of news as we look back on 2018. So what else kind of came to your mind as you were thinking about the year past?
Mass Drop came to mind. Mass Drop is a what do you even call them? They're like a group buying website, and they will do collaborations with knife makers
mm-hmm.
and get buy-in from the public, from members of Mass Drop. And they'll say, okay, we're going to create this knife by Bob DeMarco, and it's going to sell for $500 a piece. Sign up now, and we'll have the money to actually manufacture it. And so you get all, you get a head of steam built up, and you get people who are excited about this knife because it's a famous designer or whatever. And they buy in, they put their money in, and then Mass Drop has the knife manufactured through, and lately they've been using Wee Knives a lot, which is a premium Chinese knife manufacturer. And they just make incredible stuff. And so this whole Mass Drop branded manufacturing collaborations, I think, are very interesting because you have famous designers who might not have the capital or the backing to do big runs of knives on their own. They can go to a company like Mass Drop and do a collaboration with them and use their name as a designer, and Mass Drop as the distributor, and Wee Knives, for instance, as the manufacturer. And then you get those three brands together, and it creates a great design that can come to the public affordably. That's what a lot of people love about this. But you have to wait. I haven't actually bought anything from Mass Drop yet because it usually when I buy a knife, it's an impulse, and I'm not thinking, oh, 6 months from now when I get this knife, it's going to be awesome. I'm like, eh.
Sounds like a play off of crowdfunding websites.
It kind of is. And if I have mischaracterized the business model at all, please, people, let me know. But this is what I've ascertained from watching 8 million videos about Mass Drop knives.
Is that all 8 million? You bring up a good point about asking for feedback and opinions and that type of thing. And I'll just use this as an opportunity to plug the Knife Junkie listener line. We'd love to get your feedback. 724-466-4487. 724-466-4487. If you have any thoughts about the Mass Drop knife kind of business model, or if you've bought any knives that way, let us know. And then as Bob kind of continues his look back at 2018 on some of the major highlights that kind of hit him as he was looking back, if you feel like he missed anything or you want to expand on anything, again, call that listener line and let us know. What's up next, Bob?
Next is Cold Steel made changes to their steel. So for the first time in their long history, about, what is it, 2016 or 15, they switched up their cheap Japanese OS 8 steel for very nice American-made CTS XHP, which is considered a super steel, if you will. And with that came all the price jumps at the time. And that was acceptable because their knives are so darn strong. And I find them very visually appealing that it's nice to know that they had really kick-ass steel. Well, this past year, they had some trouble getting from supply problems with Carpenter Steel, who makes CTS XHP, and they switched to Crucible's S35VN, which is a ubiquitous knife steel, and it's really excellent. And I have no opinion one way or another. I do not have any cold steel knives with S35. I do have a number of them with the CTS XHP. It's hard for me to say, Jim. And that steel is awesome. In my limited use of it, it's pretty awesome. So. Yeah. No opinions, just an interesting thing. I remember they wrote a very contrite letter. Cold Steel Chairman Lynn Thompson wrote a contrite letter like, we're so sorry, but we have to change our steel to S35EN. We're so sorry. We strive to please. And I was like, damn, all right. It's okay. It's S35. It's not like you're switching it to 8CR13 MOV.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Little knife humor there, Jim. Another thing this year were the Benchmade quality control improvements that I kept hearing about and that I witnessed myself in the three Benchmades I bought this year. I am not a Benchmade guy historically, but they had a couple of models come out in the 2017-2018 period that just knocked my socks off. The Crooked River, the Proper, and the Bug Out. got them all, each one of them, top-notch quality control. And, you know, maybe it's due to their leadership change or something like that. But that's been exciting to see that Benchmade, a brand that you pay top dollar for, is back on top in terms of their QC. Here's something that shines a ray of hope on those of us who at some point in their life, well, okay, such as myself, would like to make knives professionally on a small scale. There's a company out of Canada, I don't remember where in Canada, excuse me for that, called North Arms Knives, and it's a man and his son, and with their CNC mill and their machines in their garage or, you know, their home shop, they created this amazing knife called the Skaha, which caused a real incredible buzz through the knife, the YouTube knife world anyway, because it was manufactured with such care. And you can tell just by holding it and using it that it is an exceptionally produced knife, except they made it small scale and affordable. In other words, these kind of small batch homemade knives from premium makers usually go for way more than they were charging for this Skaha. So, you know, they're producing this high-end, affordable, desirable small batch folders out of their garage, and they made a big splash with it. And to me, that I love hearing those kind of stories.
Any reason why they did that? Limited run kind of thing?
Well, because they're limited resources. It's just a guy and his son. They're making every single knife, and they're doing every aspect of the knife making.
Okay.
And plus, I like the story of a family business too, like that.
Yeah, cool.
We saw this year, well, last year we saw Tangram knives come out, and that was the super budget line of premium Chinese knife maker Kaiser. And the Tangram knives that you can buy on Amazon for $25 or less, or a little bit more, are exceptional little EDC knives. They're produced with a Japanese steel that's akin to 440C. So it's decent steel, but the materials, which aren't the highest end, are put together in the Kaiser way. They're just awesome knives. And that inspired, presumably, that is what inspired Wee Knives to come out with their line, their Civivi line. It's high-end value knives, Jim. So you got these companies that have made their bones making $300, $200 knives and collaborating with big designers and using, you know, high-end manufacturing and materials. But now they're putting out things for $25 that you can afford that still has the same quality, maybe not the same quality of materials, but the same care goes into their production, it seems, because right. They're outstanding. So that was a trend I saw. You got Tangram knives and then Civivi, and then there's just been an explosion of sort of low cost Chinese made D2. D2 is a tool steel. It's just kind of on the verge of a value steel, but it's a very nice steel. And so these companies like Tusun and Tuya Knives and Best Tech and these Chinese companies just kind of keep springing up, and they're producing really high-end, high-quality knives. These are all like OEMs, basically, that are now putting their own label on the knives they've been making for other companies for years.
Trying to figure out their business model, I'm assuming, trying to reach more of a market to try to increase their bottom line, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And actually, this leads us to the next one, which is this trend of OEMs. OEM stands for Original Equipment Manufacturer. It's companies that make things for other companies. And Wee Knives and Kaiser. Well, Wee Knives started out as an OEM, as did Millet Knives here in Utah. And Kaiser has also taken on the role of OEM, making small batch, high-end production knives from high-end makers. So now through companies like Wee, Kaiser, and Millet, you can actually buy a knife from Elijah Isham, who's the hot ticket this year as a designer, or Booz Blades, or Ferrum Forge, or even Joe Caswell, who makes these crazy knives. The Morphin Karambit is his latest one. These can actually come to market and get in the hands of knife users like you or me because these OEMs, who are very good at what they do, take on these small batch projects and create it. It's a really... You know, it's kind of an amazing service if you think about it, because I don't have the budget to buy the, you know, knives from makers that I really love, but I can buy production knives, you know, from those guys.
Right.
And,
okay.
And these OEMs give you the opportunity. And I feel like this year it was just a massive explosion of that.
Wow. Okay. Well, that sounds good for the collector, good for the marketplace.
Yeah. So I got two other things.
All right.
This one is interesting. Spyderco just announced that they're going to take on a whole new product release strategy. So in all the years past leading up to now, they released this giant, beautifully produced, big fat catalog of knife porn, basically, of what they're going to be selling in the next year. And you'll be thumbing through that catalog in January, wondering when this awesome, cool new knife is going to come out. And it doesn't come out until next December. And you get a lot of, Spyderco gets a lot of public pressure. When's this coming out? We want to, you know. And then there's always like, oh, maybe it's not coming out. You know, they're like this big question, like it's a conspiracy or something. And I think they just decided enough is enough. And so what they what they're resolving to do is over the year, they will be announcing and releasing knives and revealing new knives that are coming up on a mm-hmm. kind of a rolling scale. So sure. So they'll start the year maybe with what they know they're going to be producing right up front. And they'll put that in the catalog. But then as the mid-year and the second half of the year productions come out, they're going to announce them quickly and get a quick spike in public interest. And then boom, just start marketing and selling the knife, which is what Benchmade's been doing, I guess, for a few years. Looks like ZT was doing that this year when they just popped out with the 640, the new Emerson collaboration. No one knew about that. They just, boom, here's a new ZT. Which I got to get my hands on, incidentally.
Well, it seems like it would be good for the business because if you put out a year's worth of knives that you're going to do, things change. Yep. You know, business focus changes, price increases, you know, designer issues, whatever. So internally in your company, if you know what you're going to be doing and then you publicize it or promote it as it actually happens, it seems like it would be better and in a sense, create more buzz because you've got more buzz about your brand or your product going on continuously throughout the year.
Right. You have the opportunity to have New Year's Eve several times a year.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is like, look at this brand new 2019 knife coming out in June that you've never heard of until now. And
right.
plus, you know, I think with this last story, we'll tie nicely into this. You know, with international trade and supply issues, how can Spyderco know, you know, in 8 months if they're going to have, oh, who knows? Obviously, they know what they're doing. But I would imagine taking on this new sort of rolling release schedule will reduce some of the stress of wondering if you're going to be on schedule. Because in a sense, really, you just got to get it done by the end of the year. But that's a procrastinator's way of thinking of things. And
I hear you.
So the last thing I was going to mention are tariffs. You know, tariffs. And at first, it was looking like they weren't going to really affect the knife industry. But then halfway through the year, there was a new list added. And or new tariffs added to the list, I should say. And I have some numbers here, but I don't even know how to read them and make them sound like I know what I'm talking about. But quote, knives having other than fixed blades, which means all folding knives, and all metal from which they are made are subject to up to a 25% tariff. So it started off at a 10% and it's crept up to 25%. And so that means any knife that you're importing from China or any knife that you're importing, but I know from China is going to be probably even a worse deal. And then and then the steel or any other ancillary materials that go into making it coming in subject to a tariff. And that just can't be good for business. And, you know, I am certainly no economist and I am, you know, and politics are far from my interest these days. But I cannot believe that that's a good idea.
That was interesting to look back, Bob, at 2018. Some things that I wasn't aware of, and then some things I'd kind of forgotten about. That was kind of a good reminder to just, you know, kind of take a quick trip back down memory lane as we get ready for the new year 2019.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. It's time now for the latest knife life news.
All right, back on the Knife Junkie Podcast, Jim and Bob here with you. Final episode of 2018. It's episode 10 of the Knife Junkie Podcast, and we're going to be taking a look at knife news. And the little interesting story I heard in the past couple of weeks, Bob, was somewhere in the Midwest. I can't remember exactly, but the headline of the news story was Knife Saves Man from Gunshot.
Ooh.
Yeah, and essentially what happened, a carjacker, I think, came and tried to, or actually did, carjack the guy's car, and shots were fired, and the guy got shot, but life was spared because the bullet actually hit the knife that was in his pocket. So, how cool is that?
That is awesome. Oh, my gosh. Because you started that story, I had all these scenarios. But the bullet, the pain focused his mind, and he drew his knife and he slayed his But really, it bounced off his knife. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't remember exactly where it was. So if anybody wants to call the listener line and let us know, that would be awesome. But I saw that and I was like, I got to at least mention that on this Knife Junkie podcast.
Probably Ohio, Jim. Yeah, whenever I hear anything crazy in the news, it's Ohio or Florida. No offense to anyone right. in Ohio or Florida.
But you can say that since you're from Ohio.
That's
so.
Right. That's right.
I can't and I won't. But we thought we would do on this knife news segment is really take an in-depth look at some of the shows coming up in 2019. And then on a more regular basis, we would kind of talk about knife shows on the Knife Junkie podcast, at least promoting some of the dates so you can make your travel plans, be aware of them. And we'd love to have some knife show promoters and organizers, knife clubs that hold shows, that kind of thing. Love to do some little mini interviews with them to give them a chance to promote and talk about their upcoming knife shows. But a couple of big ones, actually, Bob, coming up at the beginning of the new year in January, the SHOT Show out in Las Vegas, which is a big one. Also followed by the Las Vegas Custom Knife Show. And those dates are January 22 to 25 for the SHOT Show and January 26 through 27 for the Las Vegas Custom Knife Show. Been to either one of those?
Never been to either one of those. I've been to the New York Custom Knife Show a number of times when I lived up there. And oh my gosh, Jim, you want to drool? Take a look at those knives, these custom knives, handmade, that you just can't imagine how people make them with their hands. It's incredible.
And pretty incredible. Yeah, you mentioned the New York Custom Knife Show that just happened, and it's going to be coming up again in November 22 to 23 of 2019.
So but of course, it's not held in New York. You got to go to New Jersey for it.
Well,
because, you know, New York.
That's the way they roll.
Yeah.
So looking ahead into 2019, if you want to make your travel plans, a couple of shows that we have on our calendar, February 1 through 3, one in Lakeland, Florida. It's the 41st Annual Gator Cutlery Club Custom Modern and Antique Knife Show. Again, that's February 1 through 3. And in Texas, February 23rd through the 24th or 25th, my notes here are a little off, but February 23, I think, a couple of day show, the inaugural Lost Pines Knife Show. That's in Bastrop, Texas. Mm-hmm. So a couple of February events coming up. Love to maybe talk to some folks involved in that because we've got a show that's been running for 41 years and then an inaugural knife show. So that's kind of a interesting juxtaposition, I think is the correct word for February.
It also shows how much the knife community is growing. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. March, we've got on our calendar, March 3rd, Marlboro. It's the Massachusetts Knife Show. That's in Marlboro, Massachusetts. Couple of shows in April, 28th Annual Greater Shenandoah Valley Knife Show. That's in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Also in April, you've got the 44th Annual Oregon Knife Show in Eugene, Oregon. And also in April 27 through 28, the 37th Annual Northeast Cutlery Collectors Association, big extravaganza knife show that's up in Connecticut. So again, a lot of longevity with some of these shows, the 28th annual one in Virginia, 44th big show in Oregon, and 37th annual show in Mystic, Connecticut. So some longevity there in the shows, and again, showing the strength of the knife community.
Wait, Jim, are you saying that people liked knives before YouTube and Instagram?
Wow, it's amazing, isn't it?
Is that true?
Yeah, so I won't go too much further, but we've got some shows in May, June, September, November, December already on our calendar. If there are shows that you are involved with that you know about, we would love to hear them. We've got a page on the Knife Junkie website. It's knifejunkie.com/shows. That's S-H-O-W-S, thenifejunkie.com/shows, where we'll have the shows that we are aware of listed with the dates, what they are, where they are, and some links to the website. But again, if you're with one of these knife collectors clubs, or if you're a promoter, organizer, one of these shows, we'd love to do a quick interview with you, give you a chance to promote and plug your show. So give us a call on the listener line, and we'd love to hear from you and kind of arrange that interview.
And now that we're caught up with Knife Life News, let's hear more of the Knife Junkie podcast.
So, Bob, what do you think about some of these shows? You think the Knife Junkie and the Knife Newbie should be heading out to some shows?
Yeah, Jim, I'm thinking we need to start getting our passports ready, or at least our tickets ready, and get a video camera and get on these planes.
Absolutely, man. Sounds like fun for the new year in 2019.
It does, and I think we can write it all off too, Jim, which is another good thing.
Not an accountant or a tax advisor, but I did stay at a Holiday once, so.
Well, there you go.
Subscribe to the Knife Junkies YouTube channel at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube.
Final thoughts on our 2018 year, episode 10 here on the Knife Junkie podcast as we get ready to move into 2019. I'm looking forward to a great full year of Knife Junkie podcast, but what's your thinking? Where are you right now?
As I'm just sitting here glancing over my notes at these 12 items, these just all came off the top of my head in a matter of minutes. And then a couple of things I looked up, but the thing that's exciting to me is that, without even really doing much research, I could think of all these things. And what that means is that there is a thriving and growing knife community. And it's exciting that there are people who care about steels. There are people trying to make their small batch knives. There are, you know, companies helping out. It's just a great community out there. And there is a hell of a lot of talent. And, So I think next year is going to be even bigger. I know 2017 knife sales had flagged. 2018, they're back up, and I think 2019 is going to be even better.
All right. Well, we'll do our part to talk about knives, knife collecting, and a lot of interviews scheduled for 2019 as we start to bring you knife makers, knife show organizers, knife YouTubers, and others involved in the community to help spread the word even more here on the Knife Junkie podcast.
That's right.
Look forward to you joining us on our venture in 2019. Thanks again for joining us, and please be sure to visit thenifejunkie.com. And if you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, call our listener line at 724-466-4487. Again, 724-466-4487. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, thenifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on thenifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at thenifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@thenifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487. And you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.